What's up, Americans and other citizens of the world? It's time for This Week in Mormons once more. I, Jeff Openshaw, am thrilled to be back in the saddle after you had to endure the insufferable rantings of Al and Steve last week. I am
grateful to be here to right
the ship and to improve upon things. And before I even ask how Al is doing, let's talk about my son's name for a little bit, shall we, Al? Let's have a discussion.
About... There was one time, and I apologize, Jeff. I don't know what happened.
Let's talk about how my son's name is Awesome, and
I feel like that's the impression that I left everybody with last week. Here is Awesome name Guy Mathias.
Yeah, Guy Mathias. Uh huh.
I like it. I think.
Why would you make fun of him? Your name is Al. Two letters to your name. You are so insecure about your name. When I first met you, you had to introduce yourself as Big Al, clearly suffering from a Napoleon complex, needing to add the big, so you have two names, because your name is so short.
That's what everybody called me growing up, Large Allen. They'd say, hello, Large Allen.
I like Large Allen better, actually.
But I like the informal Big Al, as opposed to Large Allen.
I will never forget that's how you introduced yourself when I first met you. We were at
Nor should you. I was twice your size. You were terrified. You wet yourself a little bit.
Yeah. So anyway, I do want to thank you and Steve for swinging and giving me a week off last week. It was very nice. I enjoyed some time off from the crazy chore that is bringing Mormonism to everyone.
Great content every week. Guys, it's not as easy as it looks, you know? That's why you have to donate now. Otherwise, Jeff and I may not be able to sit and talk for hours every time.
It's actually true. There's actually a donate button on our webpage. It exists.
I love that you build that stuff, man. Like, you have so many good random things going.
I added it a while ago when we started our GoFundMe pledge drive.
Did we ever get that $38?
I don't think I've even cashed out the money on there. No, we were up in the hundreds or something. Not enough to buy us a laptop, which is clearly the main reason one should do a GoFundMe campaign. But
thank you, Kate Kelly.
Yeah, well, Kate Kelly is really the
pioneer of free laptops, I think.
I feel like she's the pioneer of crowdsourcing in general.
Yeah. Yeah. As the Kickstarter guys did some of that, but didn't Lewis and Clark cover most of that? Yeah, those guys did a pretty good job, I guess.
Yeah. But, you know, she figured out how to crowdsource apostasy. So she did a very good job. Very well done.
That's not fair. That's not fair, over the line.
I apologize. I don't even mean it. How you doing there, champ? What's going on in your life?
My name is Alan, Large Alan. Please don't ever call me champ. I am well.
Can I call you Skitch?
Yeah, Skitch is fine.
I would like to call you Skitch.
We're recording in the morning, which is odd for us, but we ended up having a I had to go to the pond to go swimming last night, and Jeff was gracious enough to just move everything to the morning.
You said you were meeting with developers.
Well, I did. That came later, but obviously, it was really about the pond.
Yeah, well, naturally, as it is, of course.
And that weak 11-year-old baby he was probably crying the whole time. Was he crying yesterday?
He's an 11-day-old baby, you monkey. If you're an 11-year-old, you said 11 years old. He's not a blazer, you silly man. Oh, my goodness.
he's not a valiant.
Oh, my goodness. He's doing okay. The little dude's chugging along. He likes to sleep a lot. And
you were describing earlier the poop has gone from the black tar stuff to the Polish mustard variety.
We have switched into Polish coarse grain mustard territory. It's very good.
That's a big move. That's an open shot right there if I ever seen him.
I'm very pleased with the work he's been doing. Just today, he had the most massive poop he's had yet. We are making progress.
I hope you have, like, print shop on your 486 computer with tractor-feed paper. Then you can just print banners for him of, like, big poop and hang it over his crib with the date.
When he turns one, I'm going to do it like Jim and Dwight did on The Office. It'll say, it is your birthday with a period, and that'll be the end of it. It's gonna be great.
Remember the old days when you had print shop and everything got a certificate or something? Now you have Photoshop, but that doesn't have the pre-done templates and the easy to customize birthday stuff. There's really nothing out there that's doing.
Still Microsoft Publisher, right? Don't people still use that for things?
I've never been in Microsoft Publisher.
Isn't that part of the bigger Office suite? I mean, if you get the basic Office suite that just has you know, Excel, Word, PowerPoint, and maybe Outlook, you don't get it. But if you get the big one where you get Access and OneNote and Publisher and all and vector things, all this stuff.
Yeah, you're being too ambitious. Well, anyway, that's
Microsoft makes their equivalent of Adobe Illustrator, but I forgot what it's called, and nobody uses it, but it exists.
Yeah. You're thinking.
It begins with a V, right?
Yeah, Visio.
Visio. Yeah, they make Visio. I don't know if anybody uses Visio.
And that's definitely not Publisher. That's more flowcharty stuff. But anyway, I appreciate.
Oh, I know. I'm just going through the whole Office suite, everybody. I just want to give Microsoft a plug.
OneNote. Yeah. Okay. I'm well. I'm here in Missouri still, loving it. I'm excited about my baseball trip coming up, which is going to be fun. It's in another.
It sounds like you just said you love being in Missouri. I want to make sure I want to make sure I didn't misunderstand you, because who says
no,
that?
No, I do. Okay. I do. I love it here. I love Missouri. There I said it, people, and I'm not ashamed.
If you were here in D.C., you could be enjoying 90-degree weather and very high humidity. It's been a delight. It's very fun. My son apparently enjoys it. When Guy is crying, if we take him outside where it's swelteringly hot, he just shuts right up. He loves it. Just hangs out.
Yeah, also, if you stick him underwater, he would do the same thing. That's not humane, though, Jeff. You can't do that.
Are you telling me I can't waterboard my child? Is that what we're saying?
Yeah. Well, I don't want to live in a country where that's not okay. I'm not sure that's
I don't know what's happened to our country. We used to stand for something.
Amen.
Where have our values gone?
So are you back to work and everything? Like all that?
Yeah,
all that?
My work's been pretty cool. Thankfully, most of my work I just do anywhere I have an internet connection, it's fine. So I'm working from home for a stretch. I took a number of days off last week with the baby being born. But now I'm just working from home for a few weeks, which is great. And it's very nice, and they're extremely understanding and cool.
And tell me, is there like are all the cliches true? I mean, when you looked in his eyes for the first time, did your world change? Did everything turn fuzzy around you, and it was just you and your boy? Like, you know, like all that's, you had a lot of buildup. You watched a lot of movies up to this moment.
I really did. Preparing
for this.
Were
you a Hugh Grant character in that moment?
No, because when you watch 9 months, Hugh Grant is just an idiot. I mean, that is a terrible character. He shouldn't just
were you a Steve Martin character?
Maybe I'm more of a Steve Martin character. Maybe I'm more of a Michael Cera character in Juno. I really don't know. Of course we have a lot of listeners who are parents and who have been there, and it's pretty cool. My wife, when I got to hold the kid first. My wife had to have a C-section. And it's awesome.
You beat her to the punch. You're like, aha, you're getting stitched up. I'll be holding the baby.
Well, it's a cool
now.
Thing they do, because they want the baby to have closeness to its parents. So I was wearing a little jumpsuit thing, and they brought him over to me. It's funny you say look in his eyes. I couldn't really see him at first because I was wearing a mask and everything in the OR, and I just held him right there on my chest, skin to skin, as they call it, cheek to cheek, as the song Lady in Red would say.
Christa Berg.
And you just hold him right there, and he's all crying and trying to be warm and cute, and it doesn't feel as like mind-blowing, holy crap, this is happening, as I think one might suppose. It just feels pretty cool, and you just say, got this little dude now, this little man. And I admit I do find myself struggling to refer, when I don't want to refer to him by his name, of not using lowercase guy, of saying like, what a cute little guy. So I'm always like, what a cute little man. Hey, buddy. What's up, little fella?
The alliterations are too much.
I'm using every synonym for guy that I can come up with, but
I noticed you called me chief, and that bothered me. I said no.
It's okay, champ. It's okay. So, anyways, it's been cool. I mean, it's exhausting. I feel much more for my wife, who is getting far less sleep than I am by a long shot. But things are good though. It's been cool.
Is it as exhausting for you as people say? Like, are you not sleeping? Is he not sleeping through the night?
He does okay, dude. You know, he's a pretty chill baby. He sleeps all the time. Like, all his kid does is sleep. I mean, I seriously have to wake him up just to get him to eat food. And even then, it's a long it's a very long process trying to feed this child.
I dated a girl like that, actually. It was the same thing. Constantly trying to eat a hamburger, just fall asleep right
just,
on her.
Just narcolepsy.
It was the
Shake
cutest
Shack.
Thing. It was the cutest thing.
Steak and Shake.
She used to do this thing. She'd call it the man egg. It's adorable. Yeah, okay.
All right. Well, we don't have tons of time today. Because I'm taking time out of my work day, and then you are taking time out of your work day. So let's get down to brass tacks, shall we?
Yeah, we got Mormon things. Let's go.
Main
article this week, I think. We have a Peggy Fletcher Stack article that we don't agree with, as is the case with every Peggy Fletcher Stack article, if I do say so.
Yeah, the trib is the worst, basically.
She writes this article the headline is Mormon Church has a chance to diversify its top leadership. Will it?
Dun, dun,
and
dun.
She's asking the question of, will, you know, with the new apostles being called this fall, will the church finally take the opportunity to call a handsome German man to be in its higher echelons? Will he rise to the top?
It's for this alone, I hope, like, the next apostle is just another one of the European leaders. Call that Swedish guy, or call Bishop Causey, or call that Portuguese dude.
She's saying we need some Chinese people, or some Mexicans, or, you know, somebody with a little ethnicity to them.
A little ethnicity. Well, having, I mean, demographically, here's the thing. As we have this discussion, bear in mind, the Lord calls whom the Lord calls. Doesn't matter what race or background that
not
person
not according to Peggy Fletcher Stack, who says the world is watching, Jeff.
Yeah, the world waits. You know, they're waiting for the smoke to come out of the conference center. So everyone knows.
Will it be African smoke, or will it be Taiwanese smoke?
I'm hoping for it to be Peruvian smoke. Which incidentally is a great strain of weed. But I'm just kidding. So I don't know. I get where she's coming from. Demographically, it's easy to look at the church and say, okay, the church is very diverse, but the church is still led by a bunch of white guys, most of whom are from the Western United States, for the most part. So I understand that. And I don't know what would come of things. It is true, though, that the Lord inquires. The thing to bear in mind that I think people misunderstand is I don't believe this is President Monson going in there and just, you know, saying, tell me who it is. It's like anything else. I'm sure they're studying out the experiences and of these different individuals, who they are, what they've done.
It was described to me. I thought we talked about it on the show, but they, like, everybody goes in and writes three names on a list, and then or on a piece of paper, and they pull them together, and then they pray about them. So they're sort of shortlisting it, and then pulling that together. If you've called somebody to be an elders quorum secretary or something, it's probably a very similar process you're looking at the available candidates, you're writing names on a board and trying to very prayerfully select. I'd imagine they do much the same thing.
Yeah, of course they do. And so they very well might, they could very easily say, hey, maybe it's worthwhile for us to have some inroads in the Latin American community. How's Elder so-and-so or whatever in the 70 doing? What do you feel about that guy? And like you said, they'll narrow the field, and inspiration comes through studying things out and okaying it with the Lord and seeing if that's what the Lord wants. So it's fine, though I do just love that the whole world is watching. No, they're not. Nobody cares about this.
Fletcher Stack is convinced. Yeah, well, I actually believe that's true. We're a minority church that is making the call. I think if there was a Latino man that was called, literally the USA Today headline would read no different.
Actually, I do think that would be the main difference if the next two apostles are more white dudes from Utah or whatever, that won't make a national splash. But I do think if upper echelons of leadership comes from outside of that, if it does become ethnic minorities, quote unquote, that could get covered in the national press.
What if Peggy Fletcher Stack is suggesting that a woman be called to this position?
What is she saying? The world is
watching for this.
She probably is. That's what this is all about in the end, as we all know. Speaking of women, Al, do you believe that women are capable of counting money?
Yeah.
I mean, would you hire a female accountant at your company?
almost my entire finance department is female. But Jeff, tell me more. Why can women not count money? Why in the church do we not have female money counters?
I don't know. That's a thing. And that's where this comes from. They're asking the question. Bear in mind, I feel like this comes out of the Exponent magazine, a women's magazine, kind of a progressive women's magazine. I do feel that there's a slight tinge of rantiness to it.
A little bit of anger, perhaps?
Yeah. And that sadly, that kind of thins out its potency, even though it is well-researched. Because there's a lot of the stuff like, hey, why is the deacon's quorum collecting the tithes? Because they're males. That's a priesthood deacon responsibility. Like, it's, I guess, delineating between what is required by the priesthood and then what's not. And a lot of this is...
They have given the priesthood all of the responsibility for touching money in the church.
They really have. The biggest interesting point to this one, though, is where, and I looked this up to verify it, is where she says that they've actually changed policies. In 2010, when the church came out with new handbooks, they altered the requirements for stake auditors. Stake auditors previously all just said as the individual was called. It didn't really have any specifics. Women had served in that role. In 2010, it specified that it should be a temple-worthy Melchizedek priesthood holder, which was an interesting change in an era when we're kind of opening ourselves up to more stuff to kind of restrict that. And I wanted to make sure this wasn't just digging for nothing, because even the reference that she links to is a comment on an LDS tech page that references that. So I contacted some bishop friends of ours to see if they had any insights on it, if it says anything in Handbook 1 that we're missing, whatever it might be. And one of them had an interesting insight, and I don't know if this is why, but it at least makes some more sense. He told me that the only two sins that require first presidency approval to be readmitted to the church are murder and abuse of church funds. So perhaps they decide to tighten the belt a bit on oversight over...
You're telling me the only people they'll let murder now are men?
Yeah, pretty much.
This is madness.
This is preposterous, I know. So I don't know if that's all that it is, because obviously everything's done under the direction of the priesthood, but even everything the Relief Society does is still done under the direction of the priesthood. We learned a lot about that from Elder Oakes, you know, in his recent conference address. So I thought that was a very interesting change. And that one actually made me took pause. I thought, because before a woman could serve as an auditor. I heard also from some other anonymous sources that that there was also just a problem of just fraternizing between men and women as auditors, and they just wanted to cut it out. So there wouldn't be the risk of that.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, this would be all anecdotal, secondhand type stuff. But that was another perspective that was brought to my attention.
They don't want them hanging out in that nice, hot, stuffy clerk's office late into the Sunday.
Oh, it's a joy in there. So I don't know, Al. Do you feel like, obviously we're not in a position to change what priesthood authority should be, but are there any of these roles where you think that,
Where you scratch
your head is why a woman can't be a ward clerk or can't be involved in some way in the ruminative aspect
of
church.
Well, I'm a huge fan of where the priesthood isn't necessary for that role. You know, we talked about it before, Sunday school president. There's no reason that needs to be a man. Ward finance clerk or even an executive secretary, that's not a priesthood calling. You need somebody that has skills that can be in there to help. It does get you into a little bit of sticky situations, and just managing, trying to not be alone one-to-one with...
That could be a problem.
You know, a woman, like a woman or a married woman and a married man being alone together late into the evenings on Sunday, right? That's not keeping everything on the up.
No, the church would never be okay with that. And no one should be okay with that in general. It's just not a good idea.
But like, I think with a little bit of strategy and a little bit of thought, you could easily get a better candidate in there that might be a woman and still like have, you know, it's always you and a counselor, or, you know, you work with the door open, like whatever you're going to do to sort of make sure that's okay.
Right.
But I'm a big fan of giving more responsibility to where available to women in the church as well.
Of course.
So
why not?
We should not say that they can't count money, Jeff. That's not fair.
I redact if I said that they cannot count money.
That's what I heard. That's what I heard.
I apologize.
We are appalled together like brothers. let's see. We There's another picture that we posted up on Facebook. Good work, Jeff. This is Harry Reid and our boy Bryce Harper, both in the body issue this month, which was very exciting.
Harry Reid is showing off his messed up eye.
He did a full body paint spread on there. They made him look like a flying squirrel. It was really fun.
That's beautiful.
It's actually funny you put this up there. It's just Harry Reid and Bryce Harper hanging out in Nevada. Two Nevada Mormons being Nevada Mormons as they do. And people do not like Harry Reid.
Now,
here's what's interesting about this is, like, Harry Reid, I mean, when the brethren in the church, when they call, like, political leaders to sort of ask advice and feel things out, Harry Reid is one of them that they call. Harry Reid can go to Salt Lake and meet with that. Like, it doesn't bother, I don't think, any of the apostles that Harry Reid is a Democrat and a senator of the other party, the non-Mormon party, if you will. They still value his advice and his thoughts on things, even though he does his own thing. I mean, I don't understand a lot of the vitriol that exists in the conservative Mormon base for Harry Reid. I don't know.
I know it's funny, Jeff? Right? I mean, there were comments on here basically straight up alleging that they apparently know that Harry Reid, like, lies to his stake president about having a temple recommend.
How can you know that? When Christ says, judge not that ye be not judged, it's that righteous judgment, that judgment that says, I'm not going to judge if this guy is worthy or if he's square with Jesus. That's the judgment we're not judging, people.
So yeah.
If you judge, do not do that judgment that you just did. Don't judge.
Yeah, events, it's beyond me. Like, we have no idea. And is my understanding that Harry Reid is a worthy, involved member of the church. And like you said, he does incredible work behind the scenes to advocate for the church in Washington. Stuff you never hear about. He's very busy with that kind of thing. So it's just funny. I posted it just because the Washington Nationals shared a photo of Harry Reid with Bryce Harper. And so I thought it would just be a fun thing to share on our wall. And I did not expect the vitriol about Brother Reid.
Anger.
Poor fella. So much anger. Everyone says, like, he's passed legislation about abortion, but he's never done. Harry Reid's actually pro-life. He managed to rise to the top of the Democratic heap while being pro-life. He's done amazing things. So,
yeah, you don't have to agree with his politics, but, like, be civil, people. Be nice to the man.
Yeah, be normal. Okay. Let's see, by the way, speaking of D.C., this is just a quick mention. Deseret News published an interesting article on the fact that the Visitor Center at the temple in Washington, D.C. has now opened an exhibit about the growth of the church in the Washington, D.C. region, which is kind of cool. And so it's not for everybody, but, you know, it's good to know that the church has had a very different upbringing, so to speak, in the D.C. area compared to a lot of other Intermountain Corridor locations, given just the presence of the federal government and a lot of things along those lines. And the church has focused a lot of its growth on the D.C. region because, like anybody else, we have lobbyists, we have things we care about, and we care about the strength of our presence in the capital of the United States. And so go give this a read. It's kind of a quick little interesting rundown of what's going on. And if you're in the D.C. area, go check out the exhibit. And you can learn about the cool old Washington Chapel we used to have that we no longer have, which is sad.
I do not care. Not interested, and I refuse to go and take a look.
Sorry, maybe we should learn more about the church in Missouri, because we don't have that beaten over our heads year on, year out, year in. So many years.
All right, I don't know what this anger is about, Jeff. Maybe this...
My anger is about your Missouri exclusivity. Oh,
we
have Far West. We have Adam on Diamond. We have Kingston. We have so many places.
Jeff, I have a hymn in our hymnal about a place 15 minutes from me in Missouri. All right? Hymn number 49, Adam Ondi Amen. I defy you to find a place called, or a hymn called Salt Lake City the Beautiful. It doesn't exist. All right? So until you get that, you get out.
Wait a minute. What happened to hymn number 384, Draper Forever? I thought that was in there.
In the lovely hurricane. let's see. Speaking of oddly phrased hymns. Here we have a great article on Rational Faiths, the Keeping Mormonism Weird blog. They have a blog post entitled 11 Signs You're Dating a Returned Missionary from the 19th Century.
Good. I was worried about this happening.
We don't love everything, but I was very, very entertained by this. So I'll give you a couple of these. One, he loves the hymn In Our Lovely Deseret and not in an ironic way. Two, he keeps bringing beer to ward parties. This was a thing back then.
He insists it's okay because he brewed it himself, you see.
Yeah. Number three, he says he wants to go on double dates, but he never brings someone for your roommate. That's a polygamy joke, in case you were you weren't watching.
He
can't settle down in one place. He's just moving all over the place. Trek gives him PTSD, though he does love the clothes. He always wants to play the stick game, and no, that's not an innuendo. That's the real game, the stick pole.
Have you ever stick pulled?
Jeff, I've stick pulled. My uncle was actually the world champion stick puller as the contest was held at the Nauvoo pageant, as only it should be.
Yep. Missouri, stick pulling. We're the best. Okay, move along.
Nauvoo is in Illinois. Sorry you're not good at geography.
I'm terrible at geography.
Number seven, he inexplicably hates everyone from Missouri. That's a real thing.
He's me. He is me. I am this RM.
You are the 19th century RM. Number eight sign that you're dating a 19th century returned missionary. You visit teach a woman from Central America that he won't stop referring to as the Lamanite woman, even after you explain why it's inappropriate. Number nine, I don't necessarily understand something about the moon and Quakers living there.
I don't.
Number
10. If anyone can explain number nine to us, please do, because I don't get it.
Number 10, he used to be married, but while on the mission, his wife dear Johned him for a church leader. Heyo!
Zing.
Heyo. Ouch. If you can do a rim shot, Jeff, do it right there.
That one stings a little bit.
And then number 11, of course, he does not get your Princess Bride references. Those are your 11 signs that you are dating a returned missionary from the 19th century.
I believe that they should add to the Temple Recommend interview something about knowledge of Princess Bride trivia.
Do you believe that Wesley and Buttercup had true love, the only true love?
I think that's an important part of our church culture, and it should be elevated to doctrine.
Okay, I'll do it.
Alrighty.
If I ever get called to be a counselor in a bishopric, Jeff, you know I'm going to sneak that in there. And then when they look at me, I'll just wink out and be like, just kidding. Just kidding.
Yeah, exactly. You'll be like, what does Wesley say to Buttercup? The only thing he says to her? As you wish. It's beautiful.
How great would that be to have, that's probably inappropriate to do in a temple.
Well, yeah,
to basically troll the
interviewee during a temple recommend.
If we did, you get some good trigonometry problem, you're like, so, given that the area, and they would just be like, wait a minute, what is going on? I can't go to the temple. I'll never make it in there. Could be entertaining.
Oh, that's good. All right. Another quick little list here out of LDS Living. So I thought this was just interesting for a bit of knowledge. Five righteous women called prophetess in the Bible. So it's kind of fun.
Deborah is the only one.
You think Deborah's the only one? This has five, though.
Maybe Deborah and Anna, Isaiah's wife. Those three.
That's three. You're missing Miriam and Huldah. I don't even know who Huldah is.
Oh, Huldah. That's so, sweet, sweet
so
woman.
Yeah, Miriam, of course, the sister of Moses and Aaron, is referred to as a prophetess. Deborah was the fourth judge in Israel.
How come of all the Bible names to not make it into Utah culture now? Where's Huldah? Why would you let that go?
Should I propose this one to my wife?
Huldy, yeah.
I once asked my wife whether we can name a daughter Zillah, because I saw it in the Bible, Z-I-L-L-A-H. She has adamantly refused, saying it is too close to Godzilla, and
or
so we
Zillow,
cannot use it.
The real estate website,
or the real estate website. Huldah, though, maybe I can sell her on Huldah, or maybe you can keep Huldah for your children. I will not ape it from you.
That other weird one, Nodiah. Noadiah.
Nodiah was a false prophet, and so was Jezebel.
I just feel like that'd be fun to name your kid after an antichrist or something. It'd be like, well. I just wanted to see if you could rise above it.
What's up, Korahor? How you doing, champ? You're doing a great job there, buddy. You're doing a great job. Don't get trodden over, okay?
Hey,
if I have a son named Korahor, I'm going to work really hard to not let him run in the street. It's very important.
You're so dumb. Your dad jokes are already there. You're already a dad joke.
Dude, I've been dressing like a dad since I was like 19. I'm set for this. I'm ready.
All right. Let's see. Richard Bushman did an AMA, a Ask Me Anything, as is popular on the forum Reddit.
Mm-hmm.
If you've ever been on there. Jeff, are you a Reddit user? Do you enjoy Reddit?
No, not really. I'm not much of a Reddit person.
Well, especially after their AMA lady got axed.
That yeah, it's been a little goofy there.
But anyway, it was kind of an interesting AMA because Richard Bushman, he's written a couple of books, but Rough Stone Rolling, mm-hmm. right, was the last major one that he did.
That's his most known too.
A lot of church history in that man's head, and he's sort of a fair. I mean, more of an unbiased approach to Mormon history that a lot of people like, and some people, it makes them nervous.
I would argue that you and I, Al, are reasonably Bushmanian in our approach. He's just much smarter and more articulate than we are, and better researched.
Well, I object with the last one, but yeah.
one thing we're known for, it's our thorough research.
A couple of questions that are kind of interesting here. Well, I mean, just for a sample, we don't have to go through all these, but some of the questions. There are many people with a fraction of your knowledge of church history that throw up their hands and give up. They say looking any further into truthfulness is futile because what they've come to know negates the possibility of truth. What fundamental differences is there between those who let the knowledge negate their faith and those who let the knowledge sustain it? And Bushman replies, that question alone is something that I think a lot of us have
it's
asked
huge.
Ourselves.
Yeah.
And he says, for me, that's the question of the hour. It's hard to explain. But the believers say you must be sinning, and the unbelievers say that you are biased. On. And some of the other questions, I'm not giving you all the answers so that you'll go read it. It says, it seems that if the organization that taught you who and what God is turns out to be a fraud, that the credibility and the existence of said God comes into question. What would you say to those? He replies... I'll read this one. He says, I believe that is indeed what happens, but it implies Mormonism is the whole world for people. And when the Mormon world cracks, everything crashes down. Lots of people believe in God and Christ who are not Mormons. Are they all as flawed as Mormons? I will say something a little abrasive in hopes of being informed. Should not Mormons have a connection with God that goes beyond the church? Do we worship God or do we worship Mormonism? What should we teach our people to protect them from this vulnerability?
Hmm.
Which I think is a great
On point.
Because it's not we don't worship Mormonism, but Mormonism is the gospel and the keys as restored. But our belief in God is not necessarily I don't know how to say this. It's not that because the church is true, God exists, right?
Right.
The church is true, and that adds to our belief. Right, that increases it and gives us more knowledge and understanding of who God is. It doesn't hinge the existence of a God on whether or not the church is there. Kind of interesting.
And,
if you're Bushmanian, yeah. Big fan. I really like that he did this. Some good
stuff.
Yeah,
and I appreciate the work done here at Wheat and Tares, because they sort of distilled it down to the salient points to give some kind of pro tips about that. And that one point you made there is great, Al, because so often we I think we forget the broader Christian perspective, and our Mormon history, church history, so imbues our view of the entire gospel that sometimes what you see is people take issues with things like church history, for example, and that destabilizes the whole thing. It's like, well, yeah, but what about, Jesus and all those other good things? So yeah, check this out, folks. There's some really good stuff here. Other good examples, like don't draw hasty conclusions about complex material like the scriptures, very complex stuff in the scriptures. And he uses the example that some of the sermons in the Book of Mormon actually match some Protestant sermons from the era, for example, which is interesting, but it makes sense because I guess it depends on your point of view. I don't have a problem if Joseph Smith looking at stones in a hat was not receiving a word for word translation or transcription of what was on the plates. I'm okay with it being an inspired record, however that may have come, right? So, and if it came in his own language, that makes sense. I mean, there's nothing new to that. We use the vehicles with which we're familiar to put forth the gospel. So a lot of good stuff here. I'm trying to see if there are any other ones I would want to hit on before we'd move along. Oh, be careful about dramatic historical accounts that are from one source and after the fact, which is kind of interesting.
That was interesting.
Parley P. Pratt's record of Joseph Smith in Liberty Jail standing up and demanding, you know, that the people be silent. That there's only one record of that from Parley P. Pratt, and it came decades later. And he's not saying it's wrong, but he's also saying the fantastical kind of carries less weight when it doesn't have second and third sources and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But this is a pretty worthwhile read. I hope everyone will go check it out and get some good insights. I found it to be actually faith-affirming. Don't assume that there's a conspiracy to hide the truth. Hey, our church, the members of the 12 aren't historians, folks. They're getting up to speed on some stuff just as well. They're not called because they know church history in and out. They're called for other reasons, so remember that stuff. Oh, yeah. And then the last one I'd love to check on is think about your motives when you're trying to share the more accurate depictions of things in church history versus the more broader church record. I think we're kind of migrating.
So you're saying if I'm in a Sunday school, am I saying it just so that other people think I'm smart?
Are you saying you're smart? Are you saying it because you're trying to tear people down? Or are you saying because you're genuinely trying to help others understand? And if you want to help others understand, think about the way you present it so that people don't see you as a rabble rouser. Because it is kind of true that we sort of have two tracks right now, I think, of accounts of church history. And I think we're slowly weaving them together as one, but we're still a number of years away from that being achieved. So anyway, good little rundown. Go check it out. We'll have it linked on our website. Worth reading.
Yeah, it was good.
Let's see. Some other quick ones. Okay, the I Am a Pioneer campaign. I don't like this.
It is really dumb.
I don't get me wrong. I appreciate the work. I'm assuming this comes out of our friends at BonCom and stuff like that. You know, great things we've seen, you know, because he lives and he is the reason. All these different campaigns we've done around Easter and Christmas have been very worthwhile and great on social media.
No, this is Pioneer Day trying to reach a broader audience, and it doesn't work.
Yeah, Pioneer Day is stupid. So why? Pioneer Day.
Let us end this Pioneer Day savagery.
If you're at least doing Pioneer Day activities, I would love, like we just talked about that history of DC, I would love for my ward to do a Pioneer Day activity where we focused entirely on the pioneers of the church in our locality or in our state, whatever it may be. And I get it, this video is making the point that all of us are pioneers. It's not trying to just make a video showing church history and saying, it's at the same level as Albert Einstein.
If you're the first, you are a pioneer, Jeff.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with that logic.
I am a pioneer of the Skittles burrito. That's my invention. I am a pioneer.
You've brought it to the forefront. So I don't know. It's a new campaign. They really want you to share the hashtag, you know, hashtag I am a pioneer. And it's fine, but I feel like it's like our social media efforts have jumped the shark or something like that.
I like that last one that they use in this example of I am the first in my family to develop an app. In fact, I'm the first of anyone in my extended family and friends to develop an app. I'm a pioneer.
But you're not the first person to develop an app at all.
No, sir, you are an idiot. No, I'm just kidding. I'm sure it's very cute. Mainly, let's say if you're over 14, you cannot use that hashtag. Under 14, that's adorable. Yeah. That is really cute.
I'm not a supporter of it. I'm not a supporter. I feel like it's taking so many important things in church history and trying to just twist them around for the sake of it.
They just won't let go of Pioneer Day. That's what it is. They will not.
Of another buzz campaign. Yeah, and because none of the rest of us care about Pioneer Day.
Monsters. Let's see. This is kind of a funny one. There's a church, not our church, but this is still entertaining.
At church.
They sent a lady a bill for her tithing. I just like that idea of like, all right, we know how much you're making. Guess what? I want $1,000 because you're not paying up. And if you want to still you better pay up.
Wouldn't it be easier if you had to declare your annual income on your membership records and then the church just comes to you for your bill every year? It might be, you know.
I like that there's a monthly subscription thing and some annual fees. You're just sort of membership fees. Kind of funny.
By the way, do you have online tithing yet? I don't think it's dropped on my end. I don't know if you have it in your neck of the woods yet.
I don't know. I haven't looked.
I've got to look. Got to check it out. There are quick ones. Sadly, a Mormon Boy Scout leader, member of the church in Anaheim, California, was gunned down the other day for trying to basically stop some taggers in the area. They were just vandalizing a neighborhood. He intervened and tried to stop it, and the taggers shot him and killed him, which is super sad, and especially because it's like taggers.
Yeah, that's pretty senseless. That's you know, if like, why not just leave? Why not just get out of there? Why murder a guy? That's crazy.
Really messed up.
Remember the church served in the Boy Scouts and the whole thing.
No, I'd met this guy, Dave Elder or Elder brother Dave Douglas. I've actually met him before. I didn't know him really well or anything, but yeah, that's bogus. That's sad. Any quick mentions before we go, Al? Anything else you want to drop?
Yeah, one more. The No More Free Agency sort of push. It's something that I forget who wrote this article. It was LDS Living, but the idea was you'll notice people aren't saying free agency anymore, which for a long time a lot of talks were given about, it's not free, you pay a price. It's agency, and so now they're not even using that phrase anymore. It's more moral agency, but just sort of a shift in the conversation of how that's used. So something interesting if that's curious to you.
And lastly, another quick one I want to throw in here: 17 Mormon leaders and LDS Church members who have thrown ceremonial first pitches. My biggest problem with this is it's a whole lot of LA Dodgers. Just Dodgers for days. All these members of the 12 wearing Dodgers uniforms. There's a couple true believers, San Diego Padres, Cardinals, et cetera, et cetera. Linda K. Burton did it just the other week, actually, at the Dodgers game, and she got a lot of flack online because she was wearing a skirt. And I think everyone's like, seriously, even for this, you can't just be chilling in a pair of jeans.
Put some pants on, lady. That's what I say every
time. Wear those pants to church. Game changer.
Yep.
Wear pants.
All right, man.
All right.
Jeff, go to your guy and go to your woman. That's funny.
You're so proud of yourself.
Always a pleasure. Everybody, you can email us, contact at This Week in Mormon. Send Jeff your well wishes and such. It would be delightful.
Oh, yeah.
Also, you can visit thisweekinmormons.com and leave a comment.
And if you do, there was someone last week who left a comment on last week's show that said it was so much better for me not being there. I would like to respond to you and tell you that you are evil and clearly possessed by a demon.
Yeah, that's fair. Wrong. That's fair.
Also, folks, join us on social media. We're all over everything. Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, Google+, while it still exists. Who knows how long that'll be? And a number of avenues, so we'd appreciate it. And we'd love it if you'd go and write a review in iTunes if you're a regular listener and haven't ever done so. That's great for our visibility and search and all sorts of things along those lines. It'd be wonderful. So that's going to be it. Alan, my dear friend.
Mm-hmm.
It has been, as you would say, tremendous being with you.
Absolutely tremendous. Today. Every day.
Every day is a winding road.
Yeah, okay.
I get a little bit closer. Okay, well, Al?
I used to ride with a vending machine repair man. All right, man. Hey, Jeff, have a great week, buddy.
Thanks, buddy. I'll talk to you soon. And everybody, thanks for taking the time to listen in. And we'll join you once again next week for another rousing edition of This Week in Mormons. Until then, be well, be holy, be happy.
That's our tagline. All right, see you.
It's over!